But did I ever tell you about the time I got a job as a human cannonball?
No.
I was hired and fired in the same day.
Shut up, Wesley.
Wow.
That wasn't Star Trek related, though.
That was one of the jokes that Data actually told when Joe Piscopo was teaching him how to do comedy.
All right.
Nice.
There
So it's
we
a bit of a stretch, but it counts. You know, he was up there. Good evening, ladies and gents. My hometown was so small it didn't have a zip code, it had a fraction. We didn't have
Nice.
a godfather of crime, we had a nephew.
Oh, man.
Wow.
And then he told the human cannonball joke, and I love that. I still do that at job interviews.
How does that go?
Sometimes it goes fairly well.
Yeah, you have a lot of job interviews?
Not recently, now that I've actually got a job. But yeah, when I'm out there, you know, it's one of those things. I've got an eclectic background, you know. I've had a work history that's done everything from climbing cell towers to working on antennas all the way down to selling used cars. And at some point after the interview's done, not like during the regular interview, but once it's done, they're like, so you really sold cars? Oh, yeah, yeah. Waited tables, tended bar, sold cars, worked as a lumberjack. I was even a human cannonball once. I was hired and fired in the same day. This is the final frontier. These are the voyages of a Trek Spear podcast. Its continuing mission to interview strange new fan filmmakers, to explore new films and new fan community creations, to boldly go where lots of podcasts have gone before. I am Bill Allen, a.k.a. the guy in the red shirt, and the genius mastermind behind all of this is Adam Mullen. And joining us today, we have Jon Snow.
Morning.
Now, are you still alive? Do you still have a shot at the Iron Throne, or did they already kill you off?
I'm still going for the throne.
Okay, making sure. I haven't been watching the show. I just recognize that name, so I'm like, oh, that's got to be – that's a guy can make a Game of Thrones reference, even though I've never seen it.
I hear it nonstop.
Yeah, I hear
you know nothing, Jon Snow, all the time.
Does it start to bother you?
No, it doesn't bug me.
Okay.
I'll take any type of fame there is, even if it's not me.
So have you learned one of Jon Snow? Does Jon Snow have a catchphrase he says often?
Not really. I mean, he didn't really say that much. He's kind of a – I mean, he's really – out of all the characters on there, he's kind of the most boring one, I think.
So he's normal. He's not murdering children or sleeping with his siblings.
Well, okay.
Awkward pause there.
Yeah, actually,
spoilers.
Not me, but you know, the one on the show. Is,
oh, awkward.
Yeah. So anyway,
all right.
No, I didn't have HBO for the first season, so I figured I'd wait a few years. So that I would, because even when you try to avoid spoilers, people spoil it. Oh, what's his face died? What's his face died? And thank God they all have strange names, so I don't really remember after a while who died, which means it's, even though I've seen the spoilers, it don't affect me.
Yeah, I started watching it about 2 months, or maybe 3 months ago, and I watched one episode, and then I marathoned it, and I was through season 7 in like 3 weeks.
Wow. That's impressive.
Yeah. It was marathon, just nonstop.
Well,
anyway.
Shall we move on?
Yeah.
Star Trek related stuff. All right, so what news do we have?
Trying to think. I mean, we last year we were like, yay, Discovery's back, or boo, Discovery's back. That was the news. Other than that, there doesn't seem to be a lot of Star Trek and or fan film related news. Everything seems to be stalling for time.
Mm-hmm.
the calm before the storm, or the calm before the shadow storm, to make it relevant to today's episode.
John, do you have anything?
Not really. I mean, I've kind of been out of the limelight for a while. I was living in Oklahoma City, and when the studio was there, it was real easy to be a part of everything. And then studio moved, and I moved. I live in Texas now, so I keep in touch with Vance, and I keep in touch with you, Adam, just briefly, you know, here and there. Mm-hmm. But really, I'm just waiting for the call, because, you know, I'm just waiting to go wherever I need to go.
So let's move on to the question of the week. So this week's question was submitted by Steve Atwell. He's kind of going to be our new trivia master, so to speak. So he'll be coming up with the questions probably from now on, unless I can really think of something great. Okay, so here we go. Actor Charles Napier, or Napier, I can't pronounce his name. Anyway, Charles Napier made a name for himself in the 80s and 90s, playing tough-as-nails military types in various films and TV shows, including Lieutenant General Rex Denning in the DS9 episode Little Green Men, but got his start back in the 60s on TOS, playing a very different type of character. So, A, was he a Vulcan? B, an Archon? C, a space hippie? Or D, a Romulan? So, again, don't answer. Just think about it. But do you either of you think you know?
Yes. And I'm kind of disappointed.
I don't have any idea.
All right, that's okay. That's all right. I had kind of a guess when Steve submitted this to me last night. And it makes sense. You'll see.
No,
I mean, I could guess. I could guess. I give my guess later, but but I don't know right off the hand.
All right. Well, shall we move on to the interview?
Yes.
Okay. Bill, do you want to go first or me?
No. You jump in first. I'm going to question his parentage later.
Oh. All right. So, John, when did you first begin watching Star Trek?
I can remember watching it. I mean, even when I was a little kid, as far back as I can remember, I remember seeing it on the TV because my dad watched it, and my brother, who's 5 years older than me, he watched it. So I mean, as far back as I can remember, it's always been kind of a family staple, really.
All right. So what's your favorite series?
Not the new series that came out.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I like Voyager, Deep Space Nine.
Excellent.
Well, wait. What do you mean not the new? Oh, you don't like the new series, or you just didn't want to include that in your question?
I just don't like it.
Okay. Just making sure, because it's like, you know, some people are like, I don't want to talk about it. What if people don't like it? And, you know, nobody wants to get in on the fight, so I just wanted to make sure. We get that some people don't like it, so we understand people's hesitancy to say anything. But, so, I just wanted, because it's like, what's your favorite series? And you're like, not counting the new series. I like, you know, it's like, you're allowed to count the new series, even if we didn't like it. It's still somebody's Star Trek, so somebody's going to like it, you know.
What's one thing? What's one thing you don't like about Discovery?
The fact that the warp or the whole movement system, the fungus that goes through the whole universe. I mean, come on.
Yeah, I can kind of see how that's a little far fetched. Yeah.
I don't know. I remind people of the episode where Riker was abducted by aliens that live in subspace. And I tell them that means there's probably some type of ecosystem in subspace, which means there would be mushrooms in subspace. And if part of those mushrooms pop out in the normal space so that we see them, there's a way to – it sort of kind of can fit, because Star Trek's been good for years of giving us a very well-crafted, made-up system of science, but it is a made-up system of science. So you can find stuff like that. Like, it could be that – we use it for transportation, but the aliens that abducted Riker use it to make their subspace Caesar salad.
Right. Yeah. I hear you.
But I get it. It's not going to be for everyone. Everybody's got their show they can't stand. It's like I've met people who like Neelix.
Wow.
You like Neelix, don't you?
I don't.
Oh. Okay, good. Okay, good. I didn't want it to be that hard of a backhanded insult to you. But that's the thing. It's like we've got 50 years of Trek, so nobody's going to like it all.
Yeah, there's plenty to choose from.
Right.
All right, shall we move on to the next next question?
Yeah. Lay it on me.
All right. Is there a particular episode from, like, Deep Space Nine or Voyager that you like that stands out?
Yes. There was one that when I was in Syracuse, New York, up adjusting, doing property adjusting for catastrophes that they had up there. I was in the hotel lobby, and I knew that Deep Space Nine was coming on, and they had the Final Four basketball thing going on. So everybody in the bar was watching that, and I saw that it was time for Deep Space Nine to come on. So I went up and I turned the TVs over to Deep Space Nine. And it was the episode at the end where they had the big war and the Klingons had come in and the Federation were all fighting them, and there was this just big space battle involved, and it was incredible. I loved that show. That was really, really good. I don't remember the name of it, but I remember I was blown away, and somebody tried to change the channel, and I told him that he better not touch it or I was going to break his leg.
Oh, wow.
And so one of the TVs was on Star Trek while everybody else switched it back to basketball. So, but that was my favorite episode.
You were channeling your inner Klingon.
Yeah. Nukedok Pooch Pate.
Nice.
That's Klingon for don't touch that dial.
That's Klingon for where's the bathroom. I actually learned how to speak Klingon at one point in time.
Oh, can you tell us something, like some Klingon poetry?
Vishlach yo a ko la me.
That was beautiful.
That means, does it bleed that I might kill it?
Yeah, Shakespeare always did sound better in the original Klingon.
So what made you want to get into fan films?
Actually, it was by total chance that it happened. I was, there's a family note. Okay, so I was looking online for jobs, and I saw that there was a Star Trek audition in at this place, Starbase Studios, and I said, dude, what is this? And so I started reading it, and it seemed very interesting to me, and I expected it to be in L.A. or, you know, somewhere in New York or someplace like that. But when I found out where it was at, it was like a mile from my house in Oklahoma City, so I was like, wow. So I emailed them, and they emailed me right back, and they told me to come in for an audition. So I did, and I walked up to the warehouse, and I was like, okay, this is unremarkable. And then I walked into the bridge and was floored. I couldn't believe it. It was amazing. And I was there with Sally, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And so we auditioned together. So it was amazing. And I have no acting experience whatsoever, zero. And you can probably see it on film. But it was just so incredible being there, and I just wanted to be a part of it. And I started talking about things and auditioning. I didn't think I was going to make the part at all. I had no idea. But they called me back. They said, okay, you got a role on this deal. And so after that, being in front of the camera, I just loved it. It's just really, really cool. And so I just love the whole atmosphere of it. And then I started getting into the characters, and it's really cool to you can write a character down or play them on a computer, but that's one thing. But when you actually get to see yourself on screen, on film, as a character that you made up or somebody made up for you and you gave him life, that to me just really just blows me away, and I just got addicted to it, and I just want to do it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So
what fan productions have you been a part of?
Well, I started with Grissom. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if we can say that anymore. I started with Grissom. I was Lieutenant Driver on that, and we did that for almost better part of two years. And then I'm part of Melbourne as Fedor.
Mm-hmm.
And then hopefully I'm still the captain with you.
Well, that's the idea. Whatever we do going forward, we still want you to be Captain Baxley. Can you do an impression of Captain Baxley for us?
I don't know if we need to do it here.
So what's special about Baxley? I don't know if it's special. What accent is that?
Well, more insight into this, a little tidbit. So Vance had told me that I needed to turn in an audition tape.
Mm-hmm.
For a part in the show. And so I procrastinate because I have no acting experience whatsoever. And I filming myself and having people look at it to me, I figure that they're gonna be pretty critical, and I don't even know the first thing about what an audition tape should be or whatever. Uh-huh. So I put it off. And then Vance hit me up one day and he says, "Hey man, you need to get that audition tape in right now, like within the hour." And I said, "Okay." So I pulled over from where I was working. I was working on a job, and I pulled over into a parking lot, and I just stuck the camera up on my phone, and I don't know what happened. It just came out.
Mm-hmm.
So there was no rhyme or reason to it. It's just what happened to come out of my mouth, and I sent it, and the rest is history.
So what John and I are talking about, Bill, and for anyone who may be listening, we're talking about my Project Defiant. The captain of the USS Defiant, Paul Baxley, John is we're hoping if we can move forward with production that he'll be the captain, and the captain's accent is Australian, and according to what John just said, it just kind of came out, and I really really enjoyed that. I thought it was different. Not to say that Australians are different.
They are. They are very different.
But
95% of the most poisonous creatures in the world live there, and they think it's a nice place to take a vacation.
So I thought it was really an interesting take for a captain. So we asked John to audition because I really liked what he did with his character of Fedor on Melbourne and his previous films. So I thought he was perfect. But I'm talking to about John as if he's not here. I'm sorry, John.
No, that's fine. That's fine. You can talk about me. It's fine. I don't mind. Yeah. It's fun. I really enjoy it. For anybody that's never done it, you know, even if you're just an extra, just to be right there with all the lights shining and people buzzing around you, and then everything is quiet, and then they start filming. It's just a really amazing deal.
Mm-hmm.
To me, I think it's—I just think it's wonderful.
Well, Bill, do you have a question?
Yeah, I'm gonna steal one of yours because I do want to discuss more about playing Fedor, the half Vulcan, half Andorian character on the Melbourne. First of all, what's with all the promiscuous Vulcans out there making all these half Vulcan kids everywhere?
Well. Actually, I did some research on that. The character was made up by Vance when he was a kid, so he didn't really put any thought into, you know, I mean, he just said, this is what I want to do. This is cool. So I'm the kind of person that on my character, I have to have backstory. I've got to have a backstory of how they got there, what they, you know, what their deal is. So I started doing some research. Well, the fact is that Andorians and Vulcans really can't mate because it takes four Andorians to make one child, and it takes, you know, the Vulcans type of thing. And they have different blood types, so it wouldn't work. So what I figured was that he had come from, he's got a background where he comes from. It's basically a transporter accident where he gets fused or melded with another creature, and that's kind of how he came about.
Yeah. So it's kind of like sorry, John. It was Tuvix, when Neelix and Tuvok become fused together through a transporter accident?
Correct.
So how does it do you personality-wise? I mean, Andorians are, crazy ice warriors. And Vulcans are desert Stoics?
I think I tend more towards the desert Stoic with a little bit of animation in his and intensity in his demeanor. Mm-hmm. I really didn't know how I was gonna what I was gonna do, and I just kind of just realized that he's just a very, very he does everything by the book. He's very he crosses every T, dots every I. He anticipates what the captain's going to be doing and has it already laid in when the captain asks for it a lot of times. And he doesn't put up with any type of insurrection or any type of, you know, insubordination or breaking of the rules. So he's kind of like a Vulcan in that sense, to where he knows all the rules and everything. But he also does get a little excited sometimes. And that's the Andorian side of him. I also changed his voice up a little bit because I was listening. I was watching some of the Andorian stuff online, and they kind of talk with kind of a weird, like almost old, like an old alien voice, kind of like that. Mm-hmm. And so I changed his voice up a little bit, and then I also put a deal in there where he can't say A's. He said he substitutes an I instead of an A. So when he talks, he says Kypton instead of Captain. Hmm. And he says Mike instead of Mike instead of Mark.
Okay.
Yeah. So I just did that in there. I said let me just change it, because it just gives him something that makes him different than just another guy just talking like an alien. Yeah. So
is it Fedor or Fedor?
Fedor.
Okay. So how does he say his own name?
I don't know.
I just realized that because there's an A in it, right?
It would be Fedor.
Yeah. Huh.
See, but that's why he doesn't do that whole talk about himself in the third person thing, just to avoid the confusion.
There we go. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
It's like a space version of Who's on First. Yeah. I'm Fedor. Hello, Fedor. No, I said my name is Fedor. That's what I said, Fedor.
That's a... You know, I'm quite an accomplished surgeon. I can do something with that hump. What hump? Did you ever see that? The Young Frankenstein.
Young Frankenstein, yes.
With Igor. Yeah.
Yes.
Do you have that. any more on Fedor or Fedor, Bill?
No, that was my big concern. I wanted to know. It's like, what's the deal with these Vulcans, man? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now I can tell you that when we were shooting that, I nearly died on set because I had makeup on. I had a tight, you know, like a Under Armour shirt on and some tight pants underneath it, and then I had the uniform on over that, and they had me all makeuped up and everything, and I was in makeup for probably 8 hours. And then I was in makeup for it took 8 hours to get me to where I was at, and then after I was in makeup, I was like that for 2 days. Well, the end of that 2 days for me stopped with when I looked down and my fingernails were blue. Oh my goodness. And I thought to myself, I said, that's kind of weird. What's going on? So then I started feeling real lightheaded, got a headache. So I told Vance about it, and he had this lady who was working there, who was there as an extra. She was a nurse. She came over and took my blood oxygen level. And I was at like, I don't know, like 80% or something.
Oh, jeez.
And she goes, oh, my God, we got to get you out of this makeup. So they pulled me out of the makeup so that and I was suffocating, I guess, was happening, because they were using latex-based makeup. And so I couldn't breathe. My skin couldn't breathe. So, yeah.
Oh, my God.
That was good times.
So I bet you're excited to get back to playing Fedor.
I you know what? I am, actually.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I'm done.
Oh, I was gonna say, how are they going to get around that problem? Like a different type of paint?
Yeah, they're gonna use cream makeup rather than the latex makeup, because what they were using on me was for prosthetics and doing damage and stuff like that, gashes and scars and stuff. Mm-hmm. They mixed it together, because that's all they had at the time. So I think next time they'll probably go with airbrush and cream makeup.
Can you do an impression of Fedor for us?
item. I don't know that that's required of me. I don't know. I really have to think about his lines. Like, when I actually, everyone that knows me knows that I'm notorious for never reading a script. And, cause I just kind of let it flow, and it really irritates a lot of people. I think it's a different thing. But anyway, so I really have to read his lines ahead of time and figure out how he's going to speak, because it's not an easy way to speak for me. It's not my typical way of speaking at all. Mm-hmm. And so it's a challenge to actually talk like that. So that's why I have to read. So it's hard for me to impromptu, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Well, we should start asking people to do that Tommy Wiseau thing from the one trailer. It's not true. It's not true. I didn't hit her. Oh, hi, Mark. And make that the line everybody delivers as their character.
Yeah, let's see. How would that go? It's not true. It's not true. I didn't hit her.
Oh, Mark. Hi, Mark.
Oh, hi, Mike.
Yeah, there we go.
There we go.
Yeah, right. That was nice.
So you've been involved in two projects, one of which may not be released because of guideline concerns. What's your take on? I mean, I know a lot of fan filmmakers are like, well, we can work within this and do the small films and we'll be okay. And others are like, well, the guidelines, they're really only after the big guys who are trying to make lots of money off of this. They're not after the little guys, so we'll get by with it. And some people are, like you said, just doing a duck and cover thing. What's your take on the how do you think the guidelines are going to play out? Do you see it as you need to change your name and identity? Is that why you're using the alias of a character from Game of Thrones?
Actually, that's my real name. But my take on it is that there was an individual that got too big for his britches and decided that he was going to take on the big boys, or, you know, talk bad about them. And ZBS just said, slap, you're nobody, little boy. And if you mess with us, this is what we can do. We can crush you and everything around you. And so I don't think the guidelines really do. I don't think they're real specific to the small fan film guys like us. You know, I really don't feel that they're going to waste their time destroying us, because as a movie company and as creators themselves, they don't want to crush, you know, stuff that's out there. I mean, because really, fan film is actually free advertising for them. Because, mm-hmm. You know, I know lots of people that have been brought into the Star Trek world that weren't necessarily in it before, and now they are because of fan films. You know, but I don't think the guidelines are really going to be specific to anybody that's just truly a fan film guy. I think that it's meant for people that are trying to capitalize on it, you know, by you know, paying actors or you know, charging to use a studio, flat fees, things like that. Stuff like that, I believe, needs to be licensed. Like, I guess they license now, or they give a – I don't know what they give now, but you register a name, like, you know, and you can be – you know, you're part of them, you're part of CBS, or you work for CBS indirectly or something like that. And so I don't think it's really going to affect us as a just true fan film people. I really don't.
Cool. Now you've done some acting. Have you ever done any writing or directing yourself?
I used to write comic books for Image Comics a little bit. And then I was an avid role player when I was a kid up until about 10 years ago. And so that's acting in a sense. And I guess that's why I don't read scripts, and everything's kind of, I don't know, just, you know, impromptu stuff, because I just kind of take on the character that comes from role playing.
Which titles did you work on for Image Comics?
I was behind the scenes on Backlash, or Blacklash, I should say. I did a story that came out called Vagabond, and I also did Valentine. That one I'm actually named on. Valentine is a story that me and a buddy of mine came up with, and it was actually published in the back of a, it was an extra image in the back of a Shadowhawk Shadowhawk Series 2, number 1, I think it was. It was an extra image in the back of that. And that's Chance Wolfe, the guy that did the drawing and the art on that. And he also worked for Todd McFarland, who does Spawn, of course. And I helped him paint the Spawn mobile, and I, you know, I was around that industry for quite a while. All the big guys like Dan Norton, Dan Norton, who was the lead artist for League of Legends, he's like one of my best friends. So I've been around with those guys for a while.
Oh, look at you, like moving in circles and stuff. Awesome.
Are you currently working on any projects right now in the comic book industry?
No. I got fired from the comic book industry years ago. I'm still friends with the people, though. I got into a little tiff with one of the main artists over at Wildstorm Studios, and basically told him that he didn't need to talk to me like he was talking to me, or I'd break him in half, and because he was nothing more than a comic book nerd, and that's all he would ever be, no matter how cool he thought he was. And so Jim Lee called me in the next day, and he's like, "Hey, Snow, we can't have that. I'm gonna have to take you off these. You can't work here anymore." So anyway.
Man, we need to dress you up as a Klingon.
Yeah.
So which do you prefer, portraying humans or aliens?
Humans. I think it's easier for me to be human because I'm obviously human. Contrary to popular belief.
I don't know, man. You know, picking fights with comic book nerds, that's a Klingon kind of thing.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Sometimes you just got to put them in their place, you know, let them know who they are. But humans is easier for me.
Now I've seen Stormfront Part 1 for the USS Melbourne. Is that the right USS Melbourne, or is there another Melbourne out there I need to be looking for?
That's the one.
Okay. When is Part 2 coming out? Or is it out and I just haven't found it yet because I'm an idiot?
Default to Vance. I don't know.
So it's not out yet, but it's still in post-production.
Okay.
That's what I know.
Okay. So coming soon, but not out yet. Because I'm like, come on, man. I want to get to the – because it was a good – I mean, it was like short. And it's like, okay, now we need part two. I want to see what happens. They got their mission. Things are heating up. What's going to happen? And, oh, now we got to wait.
I think it's been almost a year since it came out.
It has been.
Are there any future projects you plan on starting up anytime soon as far as other fan films you might be looking at? Or is there something you'd – well, let's start with that. You've got Stormfront done. You've got another one that might not be released because the director is trying to respect guidelines. Is there anything else you're working on other than Stormfront Part 2?
Well, I did Starship Grissom, which was the initial production that I came in on, which was an education series that these teachers put together, and we did 4 episodes of that.
I think I saw one of those. Cadet on the Bridge talking about visiting a black hole.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, right. That was the first one.
Okay.
And we did 4 others, but I don't know if they came out because there was a controversy with some, I don't know, ownership issues. Anyway, so that project got taken away. They killed it. So, I would like to. I really wanted that series to come through. That was really good to me. I really wanted that to work out. I was very into it. So was everybody on board. They were all great. It was really, really good. Crystal was the captain on that show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like I remember. I just recently watched that for some. I left my YouTube playing and it randomly cycled through a bunch of fan films and I saw that one. And I vaguely remember, it's like the plan was it was going to be like a Star Trek themed educational program that could be shown in the classroom to teach kids STEM, get kids interested in STEM.
Right, right, yeah, and it, yeah, because each episode had its own lesson plan attached to it, and so the kids would have to do these things, and then we would talk afterwards with the lesson plan. It was really, really a cool idea, and I still, somehow I would still like to, you know, move forward with something of the like, something like that, because that's what really initially got me involved, really, into it was because it was different than just a bunch of nerds getting up and shooting a film, making themselves look great, you know. It's people that are actually trying to help. And I've got two daughters, so they're, you know, 11 and 14. So, you know, when you see something that you could be on and you're actually helping kids to educate them in a different way, a different medium than normal, I was really into that. And now, my kids always also they told everybody that I was a movie star. So that was always fun.
So about Grissom, because this is something I just like looked into after I saw the movie, so I do have some questions about that. When you guys were putting that together, were the leads on the creative team like actual school teachers, or were you guys just a bunch of well, you said nerds trying to make yourself look good, but are you just, you know, community activists who wanted to get kids engaged in school? But
no. No, they were actual teachers that were actually they taught in Moore, Oklahoma, which is the school there that was destroyed by the tornado that came through.
Okay.
Well, they actually went through that tornado and they taught at that school, and they got together and came up with this idea, and so the teachers were the ones writing the lesson plans, and they would. You know, they were good with all core whatever requirements and everything that had to deal with the state school board and all that other stuff. So that they were written specifically for training kids with school academics.
And now I know you said it was stalled out because of rights issues. Is anybody on the team working, like maybe trying to write a letter to CBS and see if there was something they could do to get it worked out, or did CBS just say, yeah, we're not going to do this right now, don't do anymore? I mean, how did it get stopped?
It was actually an internal issue between the writers and the producers. They had a falling out, and it tore the whole cast apart, the whole production apart, and one of the you know, actually several of the people split from making fan films and Star Trek, all that, completely, and just was done with it, just done. And so that was kind of sad to see, because I really liked those people, you know. But you know, a lot of times politics gets involved in there, and it's just you know, there's nothing you can do about it. And I don't deal with any of that stuff. I just kind of kick back and I'm just having a great time. I think we should all be happy that we could even get on the bridge of the Enterprise or the Melbourne or whatever. I think it's incredible, and I think that they shouldn't deny anybody anything. You know, like, go have fun. Go. That's what, because ultimately that's what it is. It's all about fun. And once you start getting greedy, that's when things start going bad.
Yeah, I can see. Yeah, it's like that's you can take the filmmaker out of Hollywood, but you can't take the Hollywood out of the filmmaker, I guess.
Right.
Because I remember, I mean, I did see I saw that first episode, and it's like there were people on there, like YouTube comments, why would a cadet not know the basics of a black hole? So I got to looking, and it's like, well, it's plot exposition, but it's designed to be an educational tool to teach people who've never heard of a black hole. You give them a character they can relate to who sees everything through their eyes. I mean, it's a neat. Can you tell us stuff about the episodes? Because I only saw the first episode. You said four got made.
Yeah.
Any chance you could give us a rough gist of what each one was about?
Well, yeah, sure. The first one was you saw the first one. It was about the black hole, and getting into the, you know, trying to skirt it, and going into the neutral zone. And the Klingons showed up. The second one was the aftermath from the black hole I think it was a quasar or a pulsar or something like that. When it blew up, oh no, a star went nova. That's what it was. A star went nova.
Yeah, and they weren't sure if it was gonna.
Yeah, it went supernova. That's right, yeah. Correct. So it and went they supernova. Were... Well, the second one is us getting hit by the fallout from that supernova. So we the ship gets hit, it gets smashed. There's smoke everywhere. Some of the people are really injured badly, and it was due to my character's he was trying to skirt some protocols and get there quicker, and he messed up, and so it was his fault. So him and the captain get into a little tiff, and then I'm sent down to the cargo bay to help people down there because there's been this debris that has penetrated the hull of the ship, and so we go down there and save people. And in the process, I get cut. My hand gets cut, which is interesting because I actually had a massive cut on my hand at that time because I'd shot myself in the hand with a 32 caliber. And so I had that prior. So the blood was actually real in that episode on my hand that was cut by this stone that we had gotten. Anyway, so there was this glowing stuff on there, which was actually a space-borne flu virus virus. And so the lesson plan on that was talking about airborne and spaceborne, sicknesses and diseases that come around. And then, the next one I'm in the sick bay and I'm very, very sick and the ship is getting pounded by the Klingons who are really putting a hammer on us. And we are trying to find a cure for this disease thing, this virus. So we have to go and we actually go down to, we get to the, Kelper 2, I think is what it was. And then, or L197 was the name of the planet. And so they find something that looks like it, this Vulcan does. So then we have to all evacuate the ship and do a self-destruct on it because the ship's being pounded by the Klingons. So then we all beam off the ship. But me and another one are stuck there, and we have to take a shuttlecraft down to the planet's surface. And that's where we stopped.
Okay.
So, each one of those episodes, so there's four episodes. Each episode, I think, was 15 minutes long. And each one of them, like I said, had a lesson plan. And one of them was about leadership. One of them was about airborne viruses. Another one was about, the supernovas and planets. And then they were going to continue on. And then we had little projects that we would do with them. We'd ask the teacher, we'd ask the kids. Like, we would come up on screen. We'd say, all right. And we'd say this monologue, what they needed to do about radio transmissions and whatnot. And so they would actually build a radio antenna or radio in their classroom with the parts that the teacher would provide, which would be really simple, like a battery, an antenna, or like a coat hanger, tinfoil, or whatever they were. They'd have those things, and then they would be asked to create these radio in one. Another one was I don't know what it was, like a survival pack, whatever. So it was really neat. It was really a cool deal.
I can see that whole survival. I mean, especially in Oklahoma, which is the heart of Tornado Alley. I could definitely see why they'd want to find a neat way to get people interested in what to do if there's a disaster of some type.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. What was it? A couple years back, I think it was. It was FEMA who did a promotional gimmick involving building a zombie preparedness kit.
Right.
And it was the same kind of – because in the event of a zombie apocalypse, you're going to need a disaster preparedness kit just like you would, and it's the same kind of thing you'd need for any kind of disaster.
Yeah, right. Whether it be on a planet somewhere else or here or whatever, it doesn't matter. You need the same
exactly.
thing.
Exactly. If your starship blows up or if your town gets leveled by a tornado, what are you going to need to survive when all your regular stuff has been knocked out?
Yeah, I mean, so it's really – that's why I say that was a really good program that we were putting together there, and we did a lot of promotions. We went to a lot of places. We went to the observatory there, and the Observatory of Oklahoma up in Tulsa, and when they did screen, they had it plastered up there on the main screen of planetariums. I mean, it was really fun. It was really a good deal, and everyone was behind it. And then greed got involved, and tempers flared, and everything split up, and that was that.
Have you written any fan fiction?
I actually have a story that I have started that is based on the character from Grissom. His name was John Driver. And the premise behind him is I had to figure out why this old guy was on this was a helmsman on a ship, on a science vessel. Because I'm considerably older than everybody on that ship, you know, because I'm 46 years old, and so most of these people are in their 20s. So I had to come up with the reason why there would be this old guy on the ship. And so what we came up with was I was a captain prior. I had broke rank to save some crew members' families and left the line of the Klingon War and got cited for desertion and lost my commission and lost everything. And so so then this story that I want to come up with is the story of John Driver and how he lost his commission. And it would be called Star Trek Driven. But I've been working on that for a while. And
very cool. Yeah, that was one of the things that that cracked me up, too, about the Grissom is the character names.
Right. Yeah, they were all very – see, the thing about that was this is why everyone hated me, because I don't read scripts, like I said. Well, everything on that script had to be said in a certain way because it was trying to convey a lesson, you know, thing. So impromptu stuff doesn't work there. So and I just couldn't get that through my head until Crystal. I was building the transporter room because I laid out all the transporter room, the floor and all that stuff. And I was doing that. And as Michaeline came over and to help us work on it. And she started telling me about how to build something. Well, I'm a construction guy. That's what I do. I'm a general contractor. I build things every day, all day. And so it made me realize how aggravated I got with that. It made me realize that these people that I'm dealing with, these are actors. And I'm in their realm trying to tell them how to do things on set. So it made me realize, hey, man, I just need to shut up and listen to these people and read the scripts. And that's what I did. I started trying to learn from them rather than trying to tell them how they should be doing their jobs. And in doing that, I think I learned a lot and I gained a lot of really good knowledge from these people because they're really good people and they're all acting students or actors already. And so that was a good deal there.
That's why I do this podcast is to hear stories like that. That's actually pretty cool. That's pretty awesome. You set out to teach, and instead you learned. It's like a Hallmark movie. Yeah. All right, I've been monopolizing the questions for a while. I should probably pass it back to Adam.
Do you have a favorite fan film memory?
Let's see. Well, I would have to say that it would be the production that I did from the guy in L.A., because he could make things look really good really fast, and so he put me as the captain, and there was a really cool scene where I was on the set, and he took this picture, just snapped this picture, and it's really dynamic. It's on my Facebook page, but and the people that I worked with there was the girl was really. Really fun to work with, and the guy, he was really cool. He was like 6'5" and just all muscle bound and huge. But working with those people was very, very fun, and I really enjoyed it a lot. And I was able to see the film right after we shot it because he edited it right then, and so we, you know, an hour later we were looking at it, and that was really amazing to me to be able to go from normal, I mean, just walking into a place to watching yourself on a movie, you know, 3 days later. Mm-hmm. So that was a lot of fun. But other than that, I'd say that my favorite memory was definitely on the cast and crew of Grissom. We had a lot of fun together. It was really, really a good time. We blood, sweat, and tears on that show because there were times that we'd come in and the warehouse wasn't climate controlled, so we'd either be sweating, just dying in there because it was 110 degrees, or there was instances where we had to drink hot water and stuff to get our breath to stop blowing smoke because it was, you know, 15 degrees inside this place, even under the lights.
Oh.
So it was pretty fun. And that, and going through all that with the people that I did, that I went through that with, that really, it really brought a sense of camaraderie for me. And really made me appreciate those people that were around me, you know, Crystal and Michaeline and Julianne and, you know, all the folk.
John, are you ready for the lightning round?
I'm not really sure what it is, but I guess.
You'll interrupt a basketball game for Star Trek, but which Star Trek sport would you not interrupt? Parisi squares or the crazy one that Riker plays with the pugil sticks?
The crazy one that Riker plays with the pugil sticks.
Awesome. Since you made an educational film, what was your favorite subject in school?
History.
All right. Which comic book character would be a good Starfleet captain?
Longshot.
All righty. Now, you've lived in New York and you've lived in Oklahoma, so which do you hate more, blizzards or tornadoes?
Blizzards.
All right. And that's it for the lightning round.
All right. Wow. Yeah, actually, I've lived in 16 different states and two countries.
So you've also dealt with hurricanes and landslides and dingo eating babies and.
Well, I was an insurance adjuster doing catastrophe work, so I was always at the catastrophes. We were storm chasers, is what we did. So I did that for 17 years.
So we wasted a whole podcast talking about fan films, and you were the guy that they based the movie Twister off of.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and I was also in the military. I was Army infantry.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was never in the military. I joined the Air Force instead.
That's awesome. You were smart.
Yeah.
Shall we move on to the question of the week?
Yes, yes. Let's go back to the question of the week.
All right. Well, the question was, actor Charles Napier made a name for himself in the 80s and the 90s, playing tough-as-nails military types in various films and TV shows, including Lieutenant General Rex Denning in the DS9 episode Little Green Men, but got his start back in the 60s on TOS, playing a very different type of character. Was he a Vulcan, an Archon, a space hippie, or a Romulan? What do you think, John?
Space hippie.
Bill, what do you think?
I am also going to go with space hippie, Adam.
Yep, you're both right. Space hippie named Adam, which is a kind of a coincidence since my name is Adam. And that's from the original series episode The Way to Eden. So thank you, Steve, for that question, wherever you might be right now.
Yeah, I thought it was a disappointing question, not because the question itself was disappointing, but because as soon as he said, you know, he got it, it's like, oh, it's the space hippie one. I don't know what the aliens were called, though. I don't know what the space hippie species name was, and it turns out it was space hippies. That's what they were called. So I'm like, okay. Wow, way to let us down, Gene Roddenberry. You couldn't call them hippieologemists.
And I usually have a bonus question. Let's see here. I'll come up with one on top of my head. So the DS9 episode Little Green Men, who did that episode? Like, what were the characters? Who, you know, like the main characters, who were they? Do you remember?
I don't. Probably Odo and Worf.
I believe it was Quark, Rom, and Nog. It's where
and
they
Odo.
And Odo. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they go back to, I want to say, the 50s.
1947, Roswell, New Mexico.
That's right. Yep.
Wow.
Yeah. The Quark got himself a new shuttle and his cousin Galen, the one who owns the moon, sabotaged the shuttle to kill off Quark because you know how Ferengi are. Yeah. And Rom was able to save them by blowing up the warp core in one of those "this just might work" situations that Star Trek is famous for. But it blew up the warp core and threw them back in time to the 1947, Roswell, New Mexico. That's where their shuttle crashed.
Wow.
And they were captured and interrogated by the military and had plans to try to take over Earth and rule the Federation. And Odo stopped them.
Go Odo.
Yeah. Yes. All right. Well, so do we have anything else or shall we wrap it up?
I can't think of anything other than I'd love to get this guy to sing "Row, Row, Row Your Boat" in Klingon someday.
Are you eating something, Bill?
Ice.
Ice. All right.
I finished off my beverage and I was still a little parched, so I'm sucking on ice cubes.
So, John, how about you? You sing us "Ice, Ice, Baby" in some type of voice.
Ice, baby, come on. Ice, baby.
There we go. That was nice. That was beautiful. That was as beautiful as your Klingon poetry.
Yeah, right? roll in a 5.0 with ragtop down so my hair can't blow.
I tell you what, that song was ahead of its time.
Something takes a hold of me tightly. Sorry. Yeah, I was called Vanilla Ice for years because my hair looked a lot like him.
So yeah, now so. You're Jon Snow from Game of Thrones.
Yeah, but I think I'm better looking than he is, really.
So just to point out, Jon Snow's name is not spelled the same as Jon Snow's name.
Right. Mine has an H.
Yeah, Jon Snow's name is J-O-H-N. Jon Snow's name is J-O-N.
Right.
There we go. And that's how we can tell them apart.
Yes. Oh, God. It's like that movie Die Hard. This is Agent Johnson. No, the other Agent Johnson.
Well, shall we? Shall you take us out, Bill?
Yes, I will take us out. I think, maybe, perhaps. All right, that's all the time we have today, boys and girls. I'd like to thank our special guest, Jon Snow, and wish him luck on his quest for the Iron Throne, which would make a heck of a captain's chair on a starship. Hint, hint, fan filmmakers. You know, Game of Space Thrones. Thank you to Jon Snow for his special appearance. You can check out the USS Melbourne film Stormfront Part 1 on YouTube. Stormfront Part 2 coming soon-ish, perhaps. USS Grissom first film is also available on YouTube, and it's a pretty neat little look at how to make an educational film that relates to Star Trek. Follow us on Facebook. Check us out at the iTunes Store and on YouTube. This has been The Final Frontier, a Treksphere podcast production. And remember, stay in school and keep out of trouble.